Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 184 for the end of October, and all the thoughts that everybody had about September and October being these horrible months so far isn't panning out. So what I thought I'd do is bring in a market expert, someone who many of you do know, And to get some insight on really what's going on and some of the things that may be the greatest trends moving forward. Guy Adami from Trade Monster. Also, you see him each and every evening at 5 o'clock on CNBC's Fast Money. Good friends with our friend Tim Seymour and John Janarian, who's been on here several times. Guy, how are you?
How are you, Andrew? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks. So let's get right into this whole situation here with, you know, the big trend over the last month has been the wink, the nod, and the kind of thumbs up and glances from the Fed about QE2. A lot of people are all excited about that. I mean, is that really what's playing out? Is it more an earnings play? What's going on?
Well, it's interesting. I think that what you just mentioned, I think this quantitative easing too is really the major driver behind things. It's also sort of lining up with the midterm election, so I think you sort of have this perfect storm for equities, at least in the short term, and I think that's really what's driving it. I mean, the Fed has basically told us that, you know, they're gonna purchase asset classes, and they've also talked about trying to prop up different securities and different investment vehicles, and I think that's what you're seeing right now in the equity market. That's the good news, I guess, if you're long equities. The bad news is, you know, I think Chairman Bernanke, I think he's doing his best to keep us from being Japan, but I think what he's turning us into, effectively, is going to be Argentina, which might be a scarier thought than the Japanese thought. So I don't know how this ends well. I'm certain that it doesn't end well. I can't believe they're going to be able to thread this needle. The great thing about what they're attempting to do is, yeah, it inflates asset classes, but it can't create jobs, and I think that's really the crux of what's going on. I think we still have a major housing problem in this country, whether people want to acknowledge it or not, and I think we have a structural job change in this country. So I think you're going to have to get used to, you know, 9.5-10% unemployment. And frankly, I think a lot of your listeners probably realize the real unemployment rate in this country is probably closer to 18%.
Yep.
Because the numbers don't include people that have just stopped looking. And I think there are a lot of those folks out there. So structural job change, still problems in the housing market. Clearly the banks have been underperforming this entire move higher in the equity market. You know, the Fed is doing their best to give people confidence, but at the end of the day, they can't make corporations hire folks.
Right. Two of the things that you mentioned there, one of the things that I have written about probably about a year and a half ago was something called consumption cannibalism, and it all was based on the idea that, you know, everybody's talking about, well, the structural underpinnings of the job market has been a problem. I do believe, as radical as this may sound on the surface, that technology is greatly to blame, and automation and efficiency is greatly to blame for much of the structural unemployment situation. We had the kind of granddaddy of re-engineering in the last 5 to 7 years, and it really said to workers, we don't need you anymore because the same process can be done by technology. And that's why we saw technology companies continue to do very well, manufacturing companies doing their best to, you know, thread the needle, as you would say, in terms of, you know, just the right mix of margins, et cetera. But yet at the same time, the employees are saying, wait a minute, what money? I'm out of a job.
Right.
So
it's very interesting that you bring that up. And, you know, I'll say this, and I'll obviously preface it by saying, you know, clearly this individual was a bit of a madman, but there's no denying that the intelligence, and I say intelligence, just use that word just for a second, of a Ted Kaczynski. I mean, the guy was, he was designated a genius, and IQ-wise, he was. And if you read some of his ramblings, that's exactly what he's talking about. Now, clearly, you know, I don't, the whole Ted Kaczynski putting pipe bombs in people's mailbox, I mean, clearly, I'm not an advocate of that, obviously. But what he talked about is sort of what you're talking about now. I mean, the term Luddite is people opposed to technological change. And what you mentioned there is the fact that technology and the advent of technology is taking jobs away from folks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was the ramblings of a madman to a certain degree. But if you sort of parse through some of the things that he talked about, a lot of it's coming to fruition now. And that's what, and effectively, that's why you're going to have a structural change in the job market, because companies have learned to be more efficient with less people. Productivity is through the roof, and it's structural change, because guess what? Companies don't have to hire people. They do more with less, and that's great for companies, but it's lousy if you're looking for a job.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that you mentioned, I think this is something that I have been, I got to send you my latest report that we just did on this. Each quarter, we send out a report to our clients, and it's this whole idea of the margin squeeze about to happen. For example, I'll give you a clear example. Kraft. We're short Kraft. We about 3-4 weeks ago, we said, you know what? It's finally time. You got to be careful on your timing on shorts, of course. You can be right all day, but you know, if you do the timing wrong, it's all over. So Kraft, we said, you know what? Look at this company. This company has a tremendous amount of, obviously, food, and they have sugar, and they have wheat, and they have all the things that go into making the product. And at the end of the day, what we're seeing is higher prices. I mean, prices of cotton were as high as from 1870s last week. Corn's flying because now the ethanol blend's going to be brought up to 20%, which would totally corrode our engines, by the way. So I'm not sure what that's all about and where they came up with that idea. And then you have just the whole genre of what exactly Bernanke is trying to inflate. And what I see is the great squeeze coming, not only to companies, but to individuals, because now from the manufacturing process to the retail, the PPI has been moving higher. CPI hasn't. You can't increase prices, so you can have massive margin pressure on many companies. Thoughts?
Great call by you. I mean, there was a great Wall Street Journal article, I think, yesterday about exactly that thing, to raise or not to raise. I mean, talking about prices, specifically for General Mills and Kraft. You know, commodity prices through the roof, but can they raise their prices? What's happening, I think, look, Kraft made a 52-week high today. There are a lot of stocks that don't make sense. I think Kraft traded up to about 32.17 today. So the stock has been performing quite well, like everything else. But to your point, and to your timing point, I think you have the story 100% right. At a certain point, people are going to go downstream, and it's going to hurt the likes of Kraft. You're going to see margin compression. There's no question about it. But for whatever reason, and I can't quite figure out what that reason is, the market's looking past that. In terms of what you mentioned in Kraft, I think they report, I think on November 4th after the close, so that's going to be interesting to watch. And I think General Mills is in that same vein, you know, stocks that are worthy of a look on the short side. The problem is and you just mentioned it, I mean, it's very difficult to time this stuff. The good news is things go down a lot faster than they go up. So if you're right, you're going to be rewarded a lot quicker. The bad news is, as you just mentioned, it's very hard to time these things. And right now, you're getting carried out on the short side because the herd is all headed in one direction. Now, I hate to be with the herd. The problem is, and you know this, sometimes the herd can be right for longer than you want them to be right. Sometimes that herd can run towards that cliff, and that run can take them a few miles longer than you thought. And I think that's where we are right now. But I do believe that herd is going to fall off a cliff. I just haven't figured out when it is. My sense is, and this probably leads you into your next question, you know, what do I think, you know, when does this all come to an end? And it could all come to an end, you know, the stars are aligning for the midterm elections and this beginning of this quantitative easing that we're supposedly we'll see at the beginning of November. So maybe that's when we see the turn in everything, you know, the turn in the U.S. dollar and then the subsequent turn in the equity market.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know, the K sometimes gets, the Kraft we thought was one of them, but we're actually short Kellogg. So forgive me on that point. We're actually short Kellogg, and we're happy with that point. But you know, you mentioned that it would be the ultimate buy on the rumor, sell on the news crescendo if the midterm elections come into a gridlock and everybody gets what they want and the quant easing. Listen, yesterday we saw that you know, the Fed officials have been on parade lately. Have you noticed?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like...
It's pretty unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I put out... We blogged a piece yesterday just showing this week, I think there was 8 different speeches, one each day. And yesterday, I think it was Honig, was it Honig yesterday, who said, listen, $100 billion clips at a time, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's other ones, hey, shock and awe. Other ones that say, you know what, we don't want to do much more. But yet, at the same... There's always one dissenter. Have you noticed that?
Oh, no, and I think there has to be. And I think that, you know... For there to be credibility, I think there has to be at least one dissenter. And it's going to be interesting. You know, I don't think the shock and awe, it looks great on the textbook. The problem with shock and awe is if they sort of, you know, they fire all their bullets at once and they leave nothing in the chamber and this doesn't work, then they're really screwed. So,
Yeah. You
know, to piece out $100 billion at a time, you know, that might not be as effective, but at least it buys them time. So it's a question of, do you want to roll the dice and you know, sort of shoot the wad at once, or do you want to buy yourself, you know, maybe 12 to 16 months and see how this thing goes? It's very interesting. I mean, frankly, I'm in the camp of do nothing. You know, I don't understand. What's funny is, you know, they're attempting to create inflation, but for everything that I see, I mean, CPI says, you know, guess what? There is inflation. So maybe there's something more to this story, that maybe there's something out there that scares them a lot more than the thought of deflation. My sense is, you know, there's structural problems that we don't know about that they see that they want to try to combat. The problem is, I think you have to let things go. You have to let the natural course of events take place and see how the whole thing shakes out. So it's going to be fascinating. It really will be a fascinating few weeks.
Hey, Guy, I got to tell you something. I do not get for the life of me at this point what the point of this QE2 with buying back the midterm to long-term treasuries is. The rates, if they're not enticing people already to do something, what is the point of all this? I don't see job creation. I don't see tantalizing people to do something. Honestly, I would much rather give people money. Honestly, if you're going to do it already.
You could absolutely make that argument. I think you make a good point. I don't think it's about the rate at all in terms of getting people to buy homes. I think it's nothing to do with the rate. I think you could take mortgage rates down to 1%, and I don't think you'd make a dent in the housing market, Frank. That's just my view. Who knows? But it's not about the rate. And in terms of the job market, I mean, you know, you can't force people to hire. You can throw all the money at this problem you want, but you can't force companies to hire. So
we got to create. Here's the bottom line. I'll give you the quickie. Ready? We got to create less political instability where all of a sudden every day, you know, you had 4 days of everything is fine, and then you had the New York Fed coming after Bank of America looking for them to repurchase the MBS. You're looking at now possibly down the line. This is really kind of fascinating. You know, if we're suing Bank of America for bad deals through the securitization packaging process, and PIMCO's in on it right now, and then the hedge funds are next, when is the consumer finally going to come in? And they're going to sue too.
Yeah. Now, look, you're speaking my language, you know, and all this to me points to a much lower equity market. The problem, of course, is that we've just rallied about 140 points in a straight line off the lows, and people are feeling good about things because I think there's an interesting phenomenon. I think regardless of whether or not people have money in the stock market, I think they feel wealthier if they see each day that the stock market's going higher. I know that might not make sense, but I don't think it necessarily needs to make sense. So I think that, to me, the stock market is the ultimate barometer and litmus test for how people are feeling. And I think, to a certain extent, the government understands that, which is why I think they're so focused on propping up asset prices.
Yeah, I agree.
The flip side of that is, I don't think things are nearly as good as the stock market seems to portray. So it's really, I tell you, we're at a very interesting crossroads right now, and it can go one of two ways. And again, my sense is it goes terribly bad, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe they know more than me, and maybe they will get this right. I just don't know how it ends well.
And I guess the bottom line here is it's very simply, you know, go with the best stocks you can right now, the best earnings with the best numbers. Go with the trend right now. Stay with the trend. Don't get consumed with, you know, going against the trend, because you can get your head chopped off. And then when the trend changes, then make your move, because trying to get ahead of this trend right now, especially when there's excess liquidity, is probably not the best thing to do.
No, you're salmon right now swimming upstream. But, you know, I'll say this. The volatility is such that it makes sense for your folks listening to buy protection against existing positions. So, in other words, if you've enjoyed a run-up in a Freeport Mac Moran over the last, you know, maybe $10, $15, $20, why not invest some of those gains and buy put protection for yourself? At least it allows you to sleep a little bit better at night. Apple, another great example. I mean, I'm sure if people have enjoyed that run to a certain extent, you know, why not spend some money and buy put protection? I mean, you could. There's a laundry list of names that have had similar runs that I would suggest doing to that. And right now, the market's allowing you to do that on the cheap. You know, insurance is something you want to buy before the storm hits, not while the eye is over your head.
Exactly. All right, great information, Guy Adami. He works and writes and does a great job at Trade Monster. TradeMonster.com, of course, that's affiliated with Options Monster and all that good stuff, all those monstery fellows. You guys get dressed up for Halloween or something?
We you know, the three of us are pretty scary folks when we put us together. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe we'll go on Halloween as ourselves, or maybe I'll go as Pete and cut my hair or the top of my head.
Of your head. You know what's great? I like when they do the pan on Fast Money, and you see Pete sitting there in his shirt and tie, and you notice every once in a while his flip-flops.
Pete comes to work in shorts and flip-flops. You know, you have to remember, he's somebody that, you know, spent a lot of time in California, so for some reason I think he still thinks he's there.
Right.
So yeah, he's got that earth thing going for sure.
And I like how somewhat laid back. I mean, he gets into it when he talks about a stock that he likes, but somewhat laid back. But John is just right in your face.
Yeah.
John's like, you know, the military versus, you know, it's great. Those two are great.
John comes right at you.
Right
absolutely.
At you. Yeah, right at you. Hey, Guy Adami, check out his work on Trade Monster also. Do you still doing the Advantage Point?
We still got Advantage Point. We've got a lot of things going on at the Option Monster website. And along with Fast Money, you know, John, Pete, and myself, we now have a weekly radio show on Fox Sports Radio called Stocks and Jocks. And it airs from 7 to 9 on Saturday mornings, Eastern Time. I think it's XM 142 for those folks out there that have satellite radio. So,
well, if you need any hookups, let me know. I got, actually, Jason Taylor has his office. I'm looking at his office right now. I don't know if you're a big fan of his from the New York side or from the Dolphins.
There you go.
I can get him and a couple other guys if you want to bring him on.
All right, great.
We'll talk soon. Hopefully, if you get down to Florida, you know where to find me. And I did hear about your last juncture down here, I think, at the Bonaventure. And I think the end result, if I'm not mistaken, was an unnamed source was unconscious for about 30 minutes.
That is a... you could speak to John and Pete about that one. I have no firsthand knowledge of the events that you are talking about.
Is it that or no recollection?
Exactly.
All right, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thanks, Andrew. Be well.
All right, bye-bye. All right, you know, we've been talking about currencies for some time and the whole gyration of the Forex markets around the world. And I thought, you know what, it was high time to get somebody that really understood this, someone who's in the trenches trading this and an expert in this area. Formerly with Charmac Investments, now on his own with Big Blue, Jason Roney. And Jason, you know, I understand you're on your way to a turkey hunt right now. And here's the question I have to start. You know, this whole currency market right now, is it like a turkey shoot for you right now? Or is it kind of like this, you know, scratching your head, wondering what's going to happen because there's so many outside influences that are really playing havoc with the currency markets?
Right. Well, it really is, in a sense, it's all one trade. And it's really just determining whether or not switches for risk on or risk off. And with the currency market, it's risk on. With the it's the rush to the commodity currencies and to the Asian currency markets. So with that, you know, you really get a good read on what's going to happen for the day if you pay attention to what happened to the Singapore dollar, the Korean won, the Thai baht. That entire complex moves as one, and that helps to drive the Aussie dollar, which helps to drive the commodity markets.
But is it all that, or is it really, really based in the last at least 6 weeks, all about the U.S. dollar and the amount? Because that's the gorilla of the currencies in terms of affecting other currencies, right?
It is, because that's what the world's commodities and world's assets are mostly denominated in. But what really gets to the core is investors and money managers have to allocate money in a way that makes sense. And the reality is growth and data out of the U.S. continues to slow. Growth and data out of the U.K. continues to slow, whereas that's the complete opposite when we come to Asia. So, you know, we talk about where the direction of the dollar, but it's more, as an investor, where does it make sense to put my money? And at current, the U.S. dollar makes the least sense.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, but here's what I do ask you about that. You know, if we look at the U.S. dollar, current account surplus issues, we look at also about the economy, we look at the U.K. economy, and frankly, the European zone, even though they're showing a little bit of a better situation, the big differential there is between the other two is they're not entering into additional more stimulus, right?
No, go ahead.
So, but the problem is, the one hang-up I have on this is, so how do you explain the yen?
The yen is definitely a bit of a beast of its own, and a lot of that has to do with the carry trade. The yen is definitely the one market, to be honest, that I've stayed away from the most, because if you were to drive the underlying fundamentals of that economy, which is clearly deflation is back in play, you know, the currency is far overvalued.
Right.
But as a function of taking money out of dollars and into the Asian currencies, You've got a couple of options. If you want the liquid diversity away from the dollar, then you'll go to the euro, or within Asia itself, you know, you'll spread it across to those emerging markets, but it still goes to the yen.
So what happens with the euro at this point? Because it appears to me that the euro also has a bit of a mind of its own. We're talking about, now you've been playing this market for a long time, and I always tell people this, and that my listeners have heard me say this 100 times, in the quote-unquote old days, if you saw a currency move 1% in a day, you got under your desk and panicked. Now it's right, and now it's like commonplace. You know, we've seen actually this week, we've seen the euro move up on a day about 1.5%. On one day, we've seen it move down 1.5%. Is the euro a viable currency, even though George Soros is questioning that? Is it something that we should be looking at and saying, you know what, it's not as bad as it seems? Because it, to me, from all the research I've done, it looks like it's just being torn apart, like drawn and quartered by so many different influences, but yet being in the center, held together by Germany and a little bit of France.
Yeah, and that's the entire fact is that the euro is what Germany and France are going to do, and the data out of Germany continues to defy all the global slowdown signs. So as long as Germany continues to perform, then the euro will be a viable option to the U.S. dollar, and it's just much more liquid in terms of some of the emerging market currencies that you have to deal with. So there's a lot of studies that show that not until you get to $1.50, euro is that a problem for even German exports. And the recent data, even just this week, data out of Germany was much stronger than expected. And so as long as that continues, then you'll continue to see the trend for the euro in place.
My thesis on the reason why Germany manufacturing is in such good stead right now is because it is the cash for clunkers a la currency. So what happened was, back a number of months ago when the euro was 118, 120, and then all of a sudden, if you remember, obviously, they came in with trillion-dollar backstop rhetoric, discussion points saying, hey, we got this money, we're going to be buying bonds, we're going to be making sure that everybody's solid, making sure the euro stays solid. Okay, I think there was a lot of manufacturers and a lot of companies around the world that said, wait a second, that's going to push the euro up, that's going to stabilize the euro, and you know what, if we want to get decent pricing right now at 120, 125, let's lock in a buttload of orders. And that's going to carry the German area and those that are on the euro in the manufacturing area for about 3-4 months or so. But once the euro moved higher, and if in fact there was that push of buying of goods from the manufacturer of Germany during that time. This is going to be like the cash for clunkers overhang. What do you think?
And I think you're exactly right. The thing is, this is an important week coming up because we're going to get GDP from the U.S., GDP from the U.K., and further reads on the European economy. What's going to happen is we're going to see reasonable growth. We're going to see 3% GDP in the U.S. But if you look down the pipe, it's very unlikely that we're going to see more than 2% growth for the next few years. So that same concept applies to what you're getting to with Germany and the stimulus impact. But then if we look out, the growth is going to lag a little. So the problem is that just adds more fuel to the fire that on a relative basis, Europe, Germany will be better than the U.S., U.K. And in an environment where China's growing at 10%, then it's difficult to see, at least in the interim, what will change the trend in the currency markets. What will end up doing it is when finally the euro reaches the point that truly slows Germany more than the U.S. Until the currency markets are just a relative play at all points. So now that it's such a global environment, so to the extent that the U.S. and U.K. are going to be or projected to be slower than Germany, it really doesn't matter if Germany's slows by half or not. As long as we're slowing by a greater ratio, then the trend will stay intact.
I guess the only thing that can happen is the monkey wrench of a default, a widening of CDS again. You got the Portugal, Italy, and Greece situation that obviously are outside influences on the currency. But then again, we do have that giant fund that has been put up by Germany. But still, inside of Germany, there's a lot of kicking and screaming going on about the lack of desire for any further bailout of the, you know, and actually some scaling back of purchases of the we'll call it the problem countries of their bonds. So, I mean, there's just a lot of issue right there when it comes to that. So, but also you have, in addition to that, the QE, which on one hand we have the Fed, you know, did you see this week, I was just talking about this, the parade of Fed talkers and speakers and propagandizers about all the things that are going to go on this week?
Yes, of course. And so it's comical in that, you know, while we're going to do a little QE, we're going to do a lot of QE. Either way you slice it, the markets themselves have priced in more probably than the Fed will be able to deliver.
Right.
And so that poses its own problem going forward. And you get to the disgruntled sentiment in Germany over further bailouts as well. It's important to point out the strikes in France itself. The reality is Europe is at least taking the austerity steps that the U.S. needs to take, and that will impact the euro with slower growth, but not until later. This is a very much, as you get to the volatility that you mentioned earlier, this is a very much show-me-right-now market in FX and in stocks. And so even though you and I may agree that in a year and a half or in 18 to 24 months, the impact of further austerity in Europe and et cetera is that Europe may be impacted by the higher euro, the market isn't going to trade that for another year.
Yeah, so. I hear you. So finally, you know, what do you take of the Timothy Geithner discussion that he says just last couple of days and into the G20 meeting that in terms of currency, you know, we are not taking a devaluation approach, and countries shouldn't do that either?
Right. Well, we have a history of that in the Treasury Department, having stated for about 8 years that we are proponents of a strong dollar policy. So I think, you know, it's very much it's rhetoric and it's words that need to be said. It's no different than China saying we'll allow the yuan to strengthen and it is 2% in 2 months.
Right.
So I think, you know, the war of words is all that is.
Yeah. So where's your favorite place to invest right now? Or what's your favorite?
I love owning the global dividend paying stocks. So for stocks,
mm-hmm.
I think that the Asian currency market is interesting and worth continuing to put assets into. But it's once the bids are pulled, that'll be a nasty retracement. So
right.
I think in the end, this is probably one of the most favorable environments for stocks over the next year or two that you can get, just because we have puts in place by central banks, by treasury departments. And an environment where global growth still, you know, when a company like Caterpillar can come out and say the things they did a few days ago, forget what the stock did that day, it reiterates that, you know, although the headline of unemployment, et cetera, is not favorable around the world, there is a significant amount of growth coming out of the BRICS region and the Asian region. And the Nifty 50, of the world, being the top stocks in Europe, the top stocks in China, top stocks in the U.S. that pay dividends is where you're supposed to be to have your money.
I think the other point that we would both agree on is that most of the companies that you're mentioning and the concept you're mentioning is not due to just simply Caterpillar, or you look at, for example, McDonald's. The growth part of the equation there is not from U.S. or European demand. It's from, let's just say, ex-Europe and ex-U.S. demand. And the thing is, those exactly. international companies that you're looking at, you're not necessarily saying like a Nestle something or a company that is traded like a Rio Tinto that is somewhere else. You're talking about possibly a U.S. multinational that gets a lot of its income due to the worldwide situation, just like, let's say, a Walmart as an example that just opened in, I think they just opened something in Africa.
And it's important to note that any of these top European, top U.S. companies such as a Walmart or Caterpillar that are getting that growth elsewhere, they're borrowing, they don't even need to, but they're borrowing at 0.075% rates because customers buy it here in the U.S. So they're able to finance their operations to capture that overseas growth at virtually nothing today, and it makes little sense to me not to be exposed to those. As well, you're getting a dividend on those companies that far exceeds anything you can get in the in the treasury market.
Right. And then I guess the final capper to this all is that we all realize that unfortunately a lot of the stimulus money, a lot of the low interest money, a lot of the very easy to get money and borrow money has essentially gone because of the structure of the worldwide manufacturing and the global marketplace, that a lot of the money actually has gone to overseas domestic companies, but to their overseas branches and divisions for construction, et cetera, that may find prices a little bit cheaper and may find the opportunities better. So it's unfortunate that you think Caterpillar is doing so great, but all right, where are you hiring, buddy? Where's the hiring coming from?
Right.
Well, we're not seeing it here. You know, when we see that a company's hiring 300 people, everybody's like, hooray. We're like, 300 people, that's like nothing compared to what we need to see. But it's because a lot of the hiring is happening overseas.
We talked today, it's easy to go back to the Caterpillars, the Walmarts, et cetera, the names that are exposed in getting that growth. But the reality is, in 5 years, the average investor is going to be speaking about companies that are multinationals, but headquartered in India, headquartered in China, headquartered in Hong Kong, et cetera, and they're doing that hiring. And it's going to be easier to purchase those securities. There won't be as many walls. And for the average investor, it is time now to go ahead and become familiar with those top companies in those countries.
Exactly. Jason Mone, I will, from Big Blue, we will put all the information about how to contact you, your information, the different things that you do, on the show notes of this episode. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
All right, send some pictures.
I want to see a report on the turkey outcome.
Yeah, I want to see some pictures of some of those big gobblers.
Okay.
Perfect time. All right, buddy. Have a good day. Thanks, bye. And to finish off this show, we're going to have, this is an action-packed 3-interview show. We're bringing back the dad of Brittany Taylor. Who's that? That's Frank Curzio. How you doing, bud? How you doing,
hey,
Dad?
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, Papa? Papa, getting any sleep?
New dad. It's funny because you have 3 interviews. Usually when I do 3 interviews, that means I was either on vacation, I didn't get a chance to look at the markets, and I try to fill them up with interviews, but I hope that's not the case with you.
No, that's not the case with me. I just thought there was 3 specific things. I had Guy Adami on. I want to talk about some of the things that he's seeing in the markets right now. I had on Jason Roney just a moment ago, and I really want to get a fixation on the currency market and what's happening. That was really interesting. And with you, I want to talk about the follow-up of when you went to China recently, because after our interview a few weeks ago, you had mentioned that you were doing your research and finishing up your research on these companies. And what I thought we would do is get some of the names, some of the things that you're looking at that looked interesting, to you, reflecting back from what you saw.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you out there, if you've been reading the news, actually, that there was Jim Chano spoke at a major conference this week saying that, he believes a lot of the case with China, a lot of these companies, everyone that he's seen, at least in the infrastructure space, is basically lying, or they're cooking the books and everything. And he said, he's seeing a lot of empty buildings there and empty malls. And I'm actually doing a presentation next month for my company at our Alliance conference with Stansberry & Associates. And I have pictures of six different cities we visited, and you know, I did not see anything that he's talking about. And I'm not being arrogant for people that know me. I'm just saying that it's just a different perspective, and it's nice to have two different perspectives. And you're going to see the market like China move up and down a lot. But based on the companies I'm going to give you today and what I saw, I think there's tremendous, tremendous opportunity there. So I just wanted to say that because I know that it's in the news that he's really worried about infrastructure.
Yeah,
companies.
Well, this is not a new item that he's talking about, and we did see recently, clearly there are some places that are ghost towns, but like anywhere else, there are those areas that are either partially constructed or maybe there was some construction that is still going on or that was stopped for some reason, different reasons, and they moved somewhere else. I know that a lot of factories did close because a lot of the manufacturing went to other places like Vietnam, maybe Korea, a few other places that were Indonesia that were a little bit cheaper than China. But the thing is, the one thing that I will say with regard to with Chinos and that is that I find it awfully interesting how close the expectations come to the reality when it comes to the Chinese numbers. Chinese growth last week was expected to come out at 9.5. It came out 9.6, and this came out just right. I mean, I think it's fascinating. Either they have great economists and ours suck over here, okay? Or, there's something else going on that they could just actually get such a close reading, even with an economy that is so much bigger in terms of amount of people and things going on over there. So that's the only thing that I have to say.
And I'm going to say something, too, just to clear the air about the government statistics and everything. And there's corruption every place, every place. And a lot of the analysts that I met when I visited China, said that, there's a lot of corruption going on. And nothing different than I think here. I mean, if someone could explain to me how J.P. Morgan is going to grow their top line by 4% from today until 2012, but grow their earnings by 40% in the same time frame, or how IBM has more sales than Apple and they continue to beat quarter after quarter by 2 or 3 cents for the last like 2-3 years. I think we have the same thing over here. And with that said, with the China statistics, I know there's a whole thing saying that everything's terrible, but China's trying to be less corrupt or do things the right way because they're figuring it out, saying, hey, you know what? We don't need to not do it right. When we do it right, look how much money we're making. We opened up the whole entire East Coast for the last 30 years. Look at the growth taking place in Beijing and Hong Kong and Shanghai. And they're starting to realize that industry where the whole entire world is dependent on this country. You know what? We don't have to be corrupt to make money. The whole world needs us.
Right.
And the government's really going into these industries, and that's going to lead to the picks right now. One of the ones that I think, the government's really pushing a lot of these industries and consolidating and getting rid of all the bad players
right
in it. And I think that's very good.
All right, so let me just say one thing in closing on that. Whether or not there is corruption or not, in the end, the numbers will play out and will show us what's going on, and the stock direction will show. So therefore, let's just say that we'd like to – let's ride it without the moral objection for a little while, whether it's true or not. Let's ride the wave as the wave is cresting. Get the heck off when it rolls over. How's that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so give me some names.
The first name is called Puda Coal. And the symbol's PUDA. And I know you're familiar with this company. I don't
sure
know if your audience is too familiar with it. Now, it's interesting because 70% of China is their energy is supplied by coal. And that number is going up, not down. And I don't know if you're aware of the pollution problem going on in China. But earlier this year in March, Hong Kong was in a state of emergency. And the API went above 500. And that's a pollution control index. And to put that in perspective, when it's above 100, that's emergency. It was 500, which is the highest level it's ever been. And they actually told people to stay in their houses. And one scientist said it's the equivalent of smoking a cigarette directly, half a cigarette directly.
Just breathing.
Now, okay. I want to put this in perspective here. I visited Hong Kong. That was the cleanest city I visited out of the six I went to. That's how bad the pollution is. It's 10
wow
times worse than the pictures and the athletes said in Beijing. It's a lot worse inland. Now, with that said, coal is going to continue to get developed. They have no choice. They have to do it.
But they're doing a lot of nuclear there too.
Well, they're doing nuclear just like we're doing solar here.
Right.
I mean, is it going to be this part? Yes, it's going to be a very small part. But coal is the main driver, and they continue to use coal, and coal
right
use is just going up,
right,
based on the statistics. Now, Puda Coal is a coal washing business, and pretty much that's exactly what it means. And they wash the coal, and they sell it to coal companies, and it lowers their emissions. And it's a huge business for them. It brought in about $260 million in sales, net income of about $15 million. However, the government recently chose them as a consolidator. Now, what that means is they're able to buy a ton of mines that the government is going to be selling them. Now, why is the government selling them? Well, they produce these mines in an area called the Shanxi Province, and that's the largest coal area in the world. they're operated, a lot of these tiny mines, by millionaires, right, who basically pay off these safety inspectors. And that's why you're seeing a massive, massive amount of deaths. I think it's something like 2,500 people died in China of coal-related deaths last year. Now, put that in perspective. We saw 33 miners in Chile, right? They lived, and it was all over the news everywhere. 2,500 people died in mining accidents. So the government's trying to clean up this industry. It's forcing these millionaires to sell these mines to the consolidators. But here's the key. They're telling them to sell these mines for 2 to 3 times EBITDA. And they're worth about 8 to 10 times EBITDA. So they're buying these mines for basically 20 to 30 cents on the dollar.
So Puda gets the deal. There's a lot of screwings going on. Whether I'm just repeating what you said in a different tone. There's a lot of guys getting screwed because they have to sell their mines. This is similar to what's happening in other business. And we talked about the rare earths this week on DH Unplugged, in that a lot of companies are required to be shut down because of the pollution issues, and they're trying to consolidate these companies so that they can have better oversight. Is that the same situation?
They have better oversight. And let me make this clear, that they're not just taking people's minds and saying, hey, you have to sell the business. These guys have been, the safety is terrible. These are mines where people have died in, and they're actually doing it to actually save these people's life. To like you said, more this way they could have a better perspective of the industry if it's under these consolidators where they could regulate the industry even better. So if the margins for coal washing are pretty good. I said, they have 260 million sales, 15 million net income. However, they're going to turn into a coal mining company. Half the operation is going to be coal mining now. And those margins are about 3 times greater. So they're not doing that now. They're going to do that in a future. And if you look at their earnings per share, they're expected to earn $1.50 this year. Next year, it's going to go up all the way to $2.30.
Wow. And this is a small company, small cap company, and it definitely moves.
Yes. I mean, shares are under $9. They're trading about 4 times earnings. Again, be careful when you're going into some of these stocks. Look for the right entry. Puda Coal it's been trading like a 30% range. When I first recommended it, it came down. Now it jumped up like 35%. It's at a good price. I'd buy it under 9, scale into it because there's a lot of volatility. But longer term, as they get these mines developed, and they're borrowing money to purchase these mines, which is a good thing. And last time they tapped the equity markets, the stock went down. It's a good thing, though. It's like people, Andrew, it's like someone saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you 100 Mercedes for $20,000. What are you going to do? You're going to borrow money from everybody because you could sell them for $75,000 to $125,000. That's what Puda's doing right now. So I think long term, it's a great play.
Okay. Now, what about I don't know if you have this on your list, but what about LLEN in that same genre?
LLEN, you know what I didn't like about LLEN is that it's widely known. It was an IBD stock. It fell off their list because it came down really hard. I like Puda a little bit better. It was cheaper, had a better balance sheet, and it was under the radar. So I chose Puda and sell LLEN. I liked it better.
Okay, next.
Next is a company called Winner Medical.
Winner.
WWIN, yes. This is a great company. It's one of the ones I actually visited in Shenzhen, which is south China. And they make medical products like Band-Aids, gauze, masks for doctors and consumers. When people in China have colds, they wear those masks. This way they don't spread their germs around. They don't really do that here. Nobody really cares about that. They also
We care about that, but we don't want to look like that looks.
Exactly.
We definitely care. If there was an invisible mask, a lot of people would wear it. But most people are like, what the hell's wrong with that guy? Get out. They're thinking,
That's a good point. And also like Ace Bandages, just to give you a perspective of what they make. Now, China just recently passed a healthcare bill, which is going to provide insurance to more than 700 million people. But more important is the money is going to be used to open up new hospitals and clinics to cover these people. And that's where Winner comes in, because these clinics need to be supplied with medical products before they open. Now, they took me through the manufacturing process. I was there for 4 hours. I had to wear one of those gowns from production to packaging to actually loading the trucks. The time I was there in the 4 hours, there must have been about 600 workers there, but 10 big 18-wheel trucks were packed up full and left to be delivered to other stores in China.
Wow.
So, which I thought was amazing. Now, the real catalyst for this company is they have a retail strategy. Now, they use a technology. It's non-woven fabric made of 100% cotton, and it's a patent technology. I'm not a Bed Bath & Beyond guy, but I actually bought their products when I was there because the cotton was so soft, I actually bought things for my babies. And it was unbelievable. And I think for me, who's someone who doesn't really care about that, to actually take money out of my pocket and buy it there, that's how soft it was. It was unbelievable. They're actually creating a retail outlet called Pure Cotton, and they have one of these demos right on their site, which is really cool. And they sell all of their products. Now, these products are towels, baby clothes, all kinds of stuff, even as far as feminine napkins go. They're selling all this in stores almost like almost like a little Bed Bath & Beyond type of thing. But I think if this really takes off and goes to the U.S., that the company could really, really take off. And it could go to the U.S. because they're the largest exporter of medical products in China. Hmm. But I think the growth is going to be in China now that this medical bill passed and a healthcare bill passed.
Let me just say something, just for you folks. Anytime that I hear a guy say that he's not a Bed Bath & Beyond guy, this is the kind of guy that you could hang out looking at the curtains in Bed Bath & Beyond. Okay, let's just state that. Okay, I mean, so, you know, it's okay here. Frank, it's okay. The second thing is cotton, you mentioned, is a big issue. Cotton hit a high, the highest level it's been in price since 1870.
1870, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. Now, first, you know, the fundamentals looking at them, the company's trading a little over book value. 8x forward earnings, very, very strong balance sheet with little debt. However, like you said, and that's one of the things I'm going to bring up, is cotton prices. They're at record levels. That's their highest cost. Now, that's a good thing because the stock went from $9 to under $5 for us, and that's where I bought it for my subscribers, and I'm about 15-20% in the stock. It's still at very cheap levels. Cotton is not like it's not like copper. It's not like gold. It's weather-related. I think it's just a temporary issue. They're able to pass these costs on their consumers and not really seeing it that bad. If it goes higher, yes, you're going to see it come down. Okay, that's the risks of owning these stocks, especially under 10 stocks. However, if cotton prices do come down, the bottom line of this company is really, really going to take off. I'm assuming that cotton prices are going to stay the same, and I think it's incredibly cheap at this level.
Did you ask them about any hedging?
They do hedge a little bit, but they didn't really get into specifics. And that's normal. A lot of people don't like to get to specifics about hedging.
Right, because most of the time these companies are awful at hedging, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, and I'd rather they didn't, but the fact that they're able to pass on these higher costs because their products are that much better than anybody else in the country, I think is a big deal. But again, we don't want to see cotton prices go higher because it's definitely going to hit their bottom line. It might hit their bottom line this quarter, but if they do reverse, which I would bet that they will reverse over the next 12 months, I think we really, really could see this stock take off.
Okay, next.
All right, last one here is a company called China Integrated Energy.
China Integrated Energy. What's the symbol?
CBEH.
CBEH. Okay, give me the lowdown.
Now, it's an alternative energy company, biodiesel. Now, for me to recommend an alternative energy
company. That's interesting.
I've seen so many of these companies go out. I mean, I've been managing under 10 stocks for, four or five years now, looking at small caps for 15 years. Alternative energy companies, they're probably not going to make, most of them aren't going to make money. They say till 2015, which probably means 2020. It's very difficult, even with all the government subsidies, to actually get these things up and growing from an infrastructure perspective. With that said,
Hold on. Tell me what biodiesel is, particularly related to this company.
Biodiesel, this is what the company does. They take all the garbage. Think about all the garbage used, all the vegetable oil, the used vegetable oil, non-edible seed oil, to make biodiesel fuel, which is used as a diesel, and it's purchased by actually coal companies. Kind of ironic, but coal companies are demanding this stuff, and it's not really because of the government. The government's behind this industry, but this company's actually profitable. They're making money. The only problem this company has is they can't produce enough biodiesel because demand is so high. So they're increasing capacity right now, and I think that's not factored into the stock. I think it can go a lot higher, but this is a company that's profitable. Its infrastructure is already established, which is very, very big when it comes to alternative energy. Remember, you're talking about a guy who watched dozens and dozens of alternative energy companies go under, and I very, very speculative for me to actually recommend this. This company is perfectly fine. They have a great balance sheet. Their costs are lower than anybody else in this industry. I mean, Gushan Environmental, which is a competitor, they saw their costs rise tremendously. This company has enough biodiesel, has enough feedstock to produce their biodiesel plants for many, many years ahead, so they're not going to see those costs being raised. Also, they don't need help of the government. They have a great balance sheet. They're seeing huge demand for their products. And best of all, very few people know about this company. So it's one of the companies that we were fortunate to visit in a place called Xi'an, which is central China.
Yep.
And they have all their railroads, the main railroads, they could deliver to any place they want in China, and they're 2 miles away from the main railroad system. Hmm. Now, they have a personal rail system for those 2 miles from their plant right to the rail system. So again, infrastructure is very, very, very important when it comes to alternative energy stocks. And the fact that they have all this done already, that the cost is so limited and that they can produce this stuff at such a cheap cost, going forward, it just seems like a great play. And also, it's not 100% biodiesel play. Okay, they have their own gas stations, and they also sell diesel to the biggest China companies in the world.
Do the trucks have to be a special truck, or can any diesel use it?
Does it have to be a special?
In other words, the engine for the trucks that use the biodiesel fuel, mm-hmm. which is the is the biodegradable.
It's mostly used by coal plants. By okay. coal plants, they usually use it.
No, because you know McDonald's does this. It's brilliant. I mean, McDonald's takes their used French fry fat, okay, mm-hmm. and chicken nugget fat, and all the stuff that they pour off and clean all the time, and somehow goes through a process, and they actually make that into a fuel that a lot of the McDonald's trucks use, probably for short haul, for just, you know, but use so that they actually can, it's a recycling process less than a pollution problem.
Yes, and the thing is here, it's difficult to set something up. Think about the infrastructure that takes place with something like that. All the McDonald's are coming in with all this used grease. You have to set up this huge infrastructure. They got to, you know, basically filter it out, refine it. Then they got to send it out to trucks and everything. They have all of this set up. That's why their cost is so little, and that's why they're such a better player than Gushan Environmental, which I don't know if any of you are familiar with, really, really came down and hurt a lot of investors. This company is just a lot different. I met with management. They're on the ball. Very good guys, conservative guys. The person who started the company, I think he started when he was 20 years old, and this is like 20 years ago. And he still owns 60% of the company, and he doesn't want to sell it because he says it's my baby. And they tell him, listen, you have to sell it if you want more institutions to come in. And he's selling a little bit of his stock now, but he's really, really behind this. And, the company's really on the ball. I think that, plus they're starting to see a lot of institutions invest in this company right now.
Cool. And by the way, so far, this is now a year out, but, you know, each year we plan a summer trip somewhere. This year went to Israel. I've been to China. I've been to all over Europe. And this year we're looking at China, part of China, and we're looking at Vietnam.
Good luck in Vietnam.
Yeah, thanks. You know, one of the things I saw actually was one of the delicacies is, this is kind of gross, but one of the delicacies is getting a live cobra, cutting it open and taking the blood, putting it into a glass of partial whiskey and partial and blood, and they put the beating heart in there and you eat it. Then they have a 7-course meal of snake.
Nice. It's like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, well, yeah, besides the monkey brains.
Yeah, and what is it, the eyes and the soup and everything. Right, but exactly. Be careful in Vietnam, but just in case you know I love you. My podcast is SNA Investor Podcast, just in case if anything happens.
Yeah, we'll do a direct link over to the late and great disciplined investor now points directly over to yours. Hey, listen, Frank, thanks for coming on. You know, I was in your neck of the woods last week, by the way. Did you get my text?
No, I didn't get. I've been so busy with.
I flew into Jacksonville. And then I went over to FSU for the game, for the parents' weekend, for the game and all that. Then I came back. We drove back home. When I was toying around, I know you're a little bit further away than Jacksonville. I was toying around, stopping by to see Brittany, which, by the way, just as about, I don't know, Frank, I don't mean to be mean, all right? But but usually people with good-looking kids will pass the pictures around so I can see what they look like. So what are you saying here, Frank? Because I haven't seen any pictures yet.
Yeah, she's a pretty baby. And I'm not just saying that because I don't think most babies are pretty. And people are going to email me on that and say, well, old Britain, they're not really, seriously.
She looks like aliens. Most babies look like aliens.
Yeah, and I'll definitely send the pictures out again. It's been so crazy for me. And you know that you and I usually talk on a daily basis, and I am, and look at the markets. And we haven't really talked for 2 weeks because right. my – averaging about 2.5 hours of sleep right now.
I want to see pictures of Brittany, or I'm going to start doing a blog post every day saying that Frank Curzio's baby is obviously hideous looking. It's like Rosemary's Baby too. That's what I'm going to do, okay?
I promise I'll send him over.
All right. I'll talk to you. Frank Curzio, Stansberry & Associates. He writes a couple of different newsletters over there. He writes the Under 10 and the Stock Speculators are called now, I think. And also he has a couple of other ones that he writes, does the SNA podcast, which is always great, great interviews, etc. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed that. I want to make sure that you know that you could write to me at any time at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll answer questions, see what I can do for you, help you out as best as possible, give me some ideas for shows, etc. 3 guests in 1 week is probably a record for us here. Until next week, I'll see you soon. Have a great week. Have a successful week. And most of all, have a profitable week. I'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.